From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. As muddy waters of the Chena River rose and spilled through Fairbanks late this summer, the University of Alaska campus became a safe and dry haven for more than 7,000 homeless flood victims, almost a third of the population of Fairbanks. Located on high ground 4 miles from the city center, the quiet campus switched from a summer academic community of 700 to a flood evacuation city housing and feeding refugees from one of the worst disasters to strike Alaska, flooding rivers that created a vast 50,000 square mile lake in the interior, an area almost as big as the state of Alabama. The story of the university's role in helping a stricken city is a simple story of ordinary people doing automatically what they knew they had to do. And it's our story today on This Is Your University. Early on the morning of August 14, Al George, an assistant comptroller at the university, was watching the rain fall outside his home on Chena Hot Springs Road. He listened to the radio reports of more rain coming down, and like many other people in Fairbanks, he began to worry about the possibility of a flood. As civil defense coordinator at the university, he knew that if waters did rise past the flood level, emergency housing on campus might be needed. Later in the morning, George relayed the information to downtown Fairbanks Civil Defense Headquarters that 300 beds in campus dormitories were available for possible flood victims. That night, fast rising waters routed hundreds of Fairbanks and families from their homes, and the first refugees began to trickle onto campus. Soon, the true proportions of a disaster began to take shape, and University President Dr. William R. Wood announced that all persons seeking shelter would be welcomed on the campus. The trickle of refugees soon became a torrent. They came by car, truck, camper, by almost anything that had wheels. Many came on foot, carrying blankets, sleeping bags, and hastily packed suitcases. And as the rising waters severed roads and finally reached the foot of the university hill, they came in boats of every description: canoes, flat-bottom river boats, and big, white outboard cruisers. They also came by air, as a massive helicopter rescue operation manned by Air Force and civilian pilots plucked dozens of stranded persons off rooftops and small, shrinking islands of high ground in the flooded city. A parking lot just south of the university's Bunnell building became a helipad, with 3 to 4 big rescue helicopters often landing and lifting off at the same time. Later, Army National Guard flatbed trucks, still able to drive through high water, carried refugees onto the campus. Many were still wet from wading through the water. Dormitory rooms and beds soon ran out. Families camped in classrooms, lounges, recreation rooms, laboratories, the Patty Gymnasium, and ultimately in any room, in any building where there was room to lay a sleeping bag. At first, the university dining commons had only enough food to last for 24 hours. U of A Comptroller Harold Byrd, acting as food coordinator, began contacting military authorities and civil defense officials. Soon, food started to roll in. Undamaged food was volunteered from otherwise flooded-out grocery stores, and a local wholesaler sent a shipment of meat. Up to 15,000 meals a day were served to refugees who waited in long lines for hours. The campus became a functioning city. The first floor of Wickersham Hall, a girls' dormitory, became an infirmary. Registered nurses volunteered their services, and the campus dispensary was staffed with regular and volunteer doctors. A recreation program for youngsters was organized in the Patty Billiam Gymnasium. A regular schedule of movies began showing in the Duckring Building Auditorium. A mimeographed daily newspaper, the High Water News, had morning and afternoon editions that carried news bulletins of city conditions and water levels, meetings, and reconstruction plans already in the mill. Essential to the welfare of the 7,000 flood refugees was the university's heating and power plant, located, unlike the other campus buildings on higher ground, at the foot of College Hill, where rising waters posed a real threat. The fight to save the power plant was a dramatic one. And for 4 suspenseful hours on the night of August 15th, flood waters sloshed to within an inch and a half of motor control equipment that, if wet, would knock the power plant out of operation. And so it went through the week. hour by hour, then day by day. The quiet campus had become a city of refuge, where determined Alaskans rested and gained strength to return and rebuild their flood-damaged community. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the University Relations Office of the University of Alaska in cooperation with the University radio station KUAC. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service. From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. In the fall of every year, the autumn equinox brings days and nights of equal length around the world. But to interior Alaskans, the equinox has come to mean something a little special. A unique kind of holiday for getting out to enjoy a day of hiking before winter brings snow and sub-zero temperatures. Last year, 850 Alaskans celebrated the equinox by entering the University of Alaska's annual Equinox Marathon. This year, indications are the participation promises to be just as great, if not greater. Scheduled for Saturday, September 23rd, the marathon will see hundreds step off the starting line onto a trail 26 miles, 385 yards long. It's one of the longest, toughest tests of endurance on the North American continent today. And it's also one of the strangest of race marathons. The story of this uniquely Alaskan event is our story today on This Is Your University. What a way to run a race. You start leisurely, strolling off from the starting line with eyes skyward, enjoying the bird life circling overhead. Out on the trail, you stop frequently to enjoy the multitudes of wildflowers by trailside. Perhaps you even spread a picnic lunch. Finally, crossing the finish line could be even more relaxed. You may be deeply engrossed in conversation with another racer about a gold rush relic you passed on the trail. Although a few serious athletes tackle the Equinox Marathon for record, to most, it's an opportunity for just a pleasant day of fresh air and hiking, sunshine and fun. The course starts and finishes at the university's Patty Building on campus. It winds up a steep slope behind the campus and onto a wooded area, then follows a road north. It cuts west across country, past the university's experimental farm, through more forest and homestead fields, and up almost to the top of Esther Dome west of Fairbanks. That completes half of the course. The return half winds down the side of Esther Dome to the small gold rush town of Esther, then back to campus through fields of muskeg and forests of birch and pine. Along the way, it passes abandoned mine shafts, old cabins, and other reminders of the bygone gold rush era. In distance, the race equals the great marathon of the world, including the famous one in Boston. But instead of roads and highways, the Equinox Marathon wanders across up and down subarctic countryside, more suitable to moose than cross-country contestants. In elevation, the marathon goes through a 2,000-foot change in altitude. The course is marked with 6-inch red discs, one marker always in view of the other. Competitors, hikers, as well as runners vying for records, wear foot-high numbers that can be easily spotted by marathon officials at checkpoints along the trail. Volunteer radio operators from the Arctic Amateur Radio Club help keep contact between the checkpoints and marathon headquarters. Water stops are set up at 3 locations along the trail for thirsty hikers, and a special high-energy food concentrate is provided for those in the running division. Hikers carry their own food, and it's not unusual to see a family of weary marathon walkers enjoying a picnic by the side of the marathon trail.
Sometimes the unusual can make things interesting along the trail. A 1963 race bulletin warned competitors to always be prepared for sudden sprints and bursts of speed. Black bears, it said, had been seen in the area. In 1964, Dr. Charles J. Hudson, former captain of Princeton University's cross-country team, hiked the marathon while on a trip to Alaska and called it something of a pioneer in distance running, if not athletics in general. Alan Small of the U.S. Army's biathlon team at Fort Richardson near Anchorage ran the trail in 3 hours, 21 minutes, and 11 seconds. The record is held by Edward G. Williams, also a biathlon runner, who finished the course in 3 hours, 7 minutes, and 10 seconds in 1965. Everyone, however, is really a winner in the Equinox Marathon. Everyone, that is, who finishes the course. For all who cross the finish line, receive a special blue and gold Equinox Marathon patch. To tired, proud hikers, it's valued just as much as a trophy. Last year, the university's 59-year-old president, Dr. William R. Wood, was one of 580 marathon racers who received a patch. He had started previous marathons but hadn't finished. There was no question about finishing last year, however. He strode briskly across the finish line, later received the marathon patch. He readily concedes it's one of his most treasured possessions, a prized reminder of the Equinox Marathon at your university. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the university radio station KUAC in cooperation with the University of Alaska's Public Relations Department. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting System. From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. What is it in Alaska that makes women learn to shoot so well with rifles? Perhaps it's a little of the same thing that makes Alaska men shoot so well. Well enough that together, the University of Alaska's men's and women's shooting teams have almost consistently walked away with top honors in national collegiate shooting matches. On the roster of U of A shooters through the years are no less than 12 All-American college rifle sharpshooters. Starting in 1961 with Stu Watkins, who won the All-America honor 4 years in a row. Neil Eklund has won it 3 consecutive years and is now back competing in his 4th year. The lady shooters have done as well. The university's women's team has placed first in the nation every year since 1961, except 1965. Well, what's the story behind the spectacular shooting success of university teams? It's our story today on This Is Your University. There's no secret of all, of course, to the success of U of A rifle teams. Success has come from a lot of hard work, practice, patience, and a certain amount of luck. But it also takes a good shooting coach, like Sergeant Ken Evans of the university's Reserve Officer Training Corps program. Besides coaching university rifle teams, Evans teaches courses in basic rifle marksmanship to students in ROTC. As you might expect of a man teaching some of the nation's top college shooters, Evans has quite a record of his own. In 1956, he scored his way onto the U.S. Army's National Rifle Team, and in 1957 and 58, he was named a Distinguished Army Marksman. He was also included in a select President's 100 of the top 100 military shooters in the United States. Evans has some surprising opinions of what it takes and to make Alaskans shoot so well. Although Alaskans hunt with rifles from the time they're old enough to pick one up, it isn't this that leads to top national honors on target shooting courses, Evans says. As a matter of fact, he explains, shooting habits learned while hunting game in Alaska wilderness many times have to be unlearned, so to speak, for the shooter to enter precision shooting matches with any hope of scoring. Alaska game hunters, used to the weight and kick of heavy magnum rifles, need practice to get used to the lightweight 22 caliber rifles used in competition. Sergeant Evans says he'd rather train a young person who had never fired than teach someone long experienced in hunting and shooting. At the University of Alaska this year, a general beginning course in rifle marksmanship has attracted over 200 students. 40 U of A girls are competing for four positions on the school's women's rifle team. Shooting, it seems, is a popular sport around the interior Alaska campus. One reason is that the long, cold winter that envelops a university campus tends to discourage outdoor sports and encourage indoor competition. In rifle shooting, a natural enough sport for Alaskans, a well-lighted indoor firing range in the university's paddy building provides an ideal facility for the long hours of practice and training needed to produce top-notch competition shooters. This year, it looks like another good season for the university's three rifle teams. 16 shooters from last year's teams have returned, and a good many freshmen are trying out for positions. In addition, one of the state's best young shooters, 18-year-old Barbara Despain of Fairbanks, has enrolled at the university and will be firing with the U of A varsity. Shooting in competition matches since she was eight, Barbara has won many state and national honors. This year, Coach Evans hopes she'll help her fellow shooters bring new honors to the University of Alaska. This is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the University Relations Office of the University of Alaska in cooperation with the university radio station KUAC. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service. From the University of Alaska at College, this is Your University. It's been known by many affectionate and some not-so-affectionate nicknames. It, of course, is ROTC, known officially as ROTC, the Army's Reserve Officers Training Corps. Since the establishment of the University of Alaska as a land-grant college, ROTC programs have been offered to students to enable them to earn commissions as officers in the armed forces. Until this year, the university operated a four-year Army ROTC program with the first 2 years for freshmen and sophomores compulsory. Having served through 2 years of the non-voluntary program, students could then elect to enter the voluntary junior and senior years of the program, which led directly to a commission as a second lieutenant in the United States Army. Well, ROTC wasn't the most popular course among freshmen and sophomores. It seems nobody really likes being made to do anything. So last year, at the request of the students, the university's Board of Regents voted to make the entire ROTC program voluntary for an experimental 2-year period. The story of how ROTC is faring this year, for the first time entirely voluntary and elective, is our story today on This Is Your University. Surprisingly, ROTC isn't faring badly at all this year. Out of 209 entering freshman men, over 120 of them have enrolled in ROTC, or over 50% of the class. Statistically, that's a far better record than most other courses of study offered at the university. The unexpected popularity of ROTC this year surprised no one more than the regular Army officers teaching the courses. They had anticipated a big drop in enrollment based on studies at other universities that showed that enrollment had plummeted sometimes as much as 90% the year following a similar change. But the studies also showed that enrollment usually bounced back the next year to a good level. The basic mission of the four-year ROTC program is to provide a source of trained, university-educated officers for the nation's armed forces. While West Point and Army Officer Candidate Schools provide professional soldiers and officers who make the military their lifetime work, ROTC provides the kind of soldier on which the military defense system of the United States has traditionally been based, the citizen soldier who volunteers to wear the military uniform for a length of time, but who then returns to his normal civilian occupation. At the University of Alaska, freshman students take basic classroom courses in Army and military organization, first aid instruction, and classes in dismantling, cleaning, and firing the Army's basic M14 rifle, and also how to do the close order drill that every soldier learns. But the purpose of the entire program is to find and develop leaders. The idea is that as a student progresses from his second to third and fourth years, he can be promoted up through the ranks and in the process learn to lead men. A special course during the last year in the university's ROTC program is a flight instruction program in which students learn to fly and receive private pilot licenses, with Uncle Sam picking up the tab. So all in all, good old ROTC at the U of A isn't such a bad deal. At least, that's the way students enrolled in the program feel this year. And having the program on a voluntary basis seems to be turning out much better than the old compulsory system. Although the group is smaller, its members are more enthusiastic and willing to learn, and it's making for a better system all the way around at the University of Alaska. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the Department of News Service at the University of Alaska in cooperation with the university radio station KUAC. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service. From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. Lots of things are improvised and made at home in the frontier land of Alaska, and culture has almost traditionally been one of them. When gold was discovered and thousands of prospectors stampeded north around the turn of the century, they didn't exactly find a Philadelphia waiting for them. They not only had to build their cities with what they carried, but during the long subarctic winters, they had to make and improvise entertainment. What started as amateur comedy skits in the old mining camps has developed into a tradition of do-it-yourself culture that has been going on strong ever since in Alaska, and in particular at the University of Alaska. This fall, the university's drama workshop enters its 12th year of producing live drama with volunteer acting, directing, and technical workers. The part the university's workshop plays in keeping the Alaska tradition alive is our story today on This Is Your University. The university's drama workshop, like the Fairbanks Drama Association, the Juno Douglas Little Theater, and other volunteer drama associations around the state, is made up largely of everyday people from the general community, people just interested in theater. Although many in the U of A workshop casts are students enrolled in drama classes, you don't have to be a university student or even connected with the university to try out for a part in a play. Most of what it takes to get a part, says director-instructor Robin Faller, is some dramatic acting ability plus an ability to fit the part you try out for. Faller chooses players for each cast. This year, the workshop's first production will be the Pulitzer Prize-winning play J.B. by Archibald MacLeish. It will be presented October 27th through the 29th and November 3rd through the 5th on the university campus. J.B. quickly became a huge box office success on Broadway after MacLeish wrote it in 1958 as his first full-length play. University students in the J.B. cast are Jim Bartlett, Paul Quist, Charles Willis, Nita Washburn, Barbara Hughes, Connie Miller, and Dorothea Taylor of Fairbanks. Carol Dart of Tok and Kathy Willman of Juneau. Others include Jim Hadra, a university language professor, Mary Lou Spartz of college, Julian Rivers of Fairbanks, and Mike Downing, a university employee. Of the play's cast, some are veterans of many earlier workshop productions. Miss Dart, Rivers, Quist, and Hadra have been acting in university productions for several seasons. Of five children's parts in JB, two are filled by Gina Spartz, age 6, and her older sister Tracy, 9. Tracy and Gina are the daughters of Mary Lou Spartz, playing the part of Mrs. Murphy in the play. Three other children in the play are Chris, Linda, and Roland Warfel, children of Mr. and Mrs. Ken Warfel of college. Although neither of the parents are in this workshop production, they have been active in past plays. In directing workshop productions this year, Faller takes a role occupied in past years by Lee Salisbury, who helped start the drama workshop. Salisbury has taken a year of sabbatical leave to do graduate study at the University of Hawaii. Faller himself is a veteran of many earlier productions. Now a faculty member, he graduated from the U of A and did graduate study also at the University of Hawaii. He played roles in such former workshop productions as Chalk Garden and The Caretaker. He's the first to agree that the finished dramatic production staged in Scheibel Auditorium on the U of A campus these days must be a far cry from the rough minor skits of the Gold Rush camps. Both, however, are a part of Alaska's amateur drama tradition, helped along at your university. This is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the University Relations Department in cooperation with the university's radio station, KUAC. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting System.